You're listening to SurgeCast, a podcast made specifically for busy general surgery residents. Okay, welcome back to SurgeCast. This is the final lecture in the section of pancreas, and today we're going to go over a Whipple or pancreatic duodenectomy, as well as how to do a distal pancreatectomy. So let's start with the Whipple first. The indications are vast. So the first and kind of most common one is a pancreatic adenocarcinoma. The other ones to think about are neuroendocrine tumor, but we've also talked about using Whipples for distal cholangiocarcinoma or as a treatment for benign conditions like chronic pancreatitis with stricturing. I've also personally seen this as a treatment for folks who have colorectal cancer that's extending into the duodenum, for instance, D2. And the correct answer there, again, is a Whipple procedure. So in order to do this, you have to remember a couple of high points. And one is that the perihepatic vasculature tends to be kind of variable. So again, favorite board question, remember that that replaced right hepatic artery is coming off of the SMA when it really should be coming off of the celiac axis. The porta itself is generally composed of, again, the portal vein, the common bile duct, and the hepatic artery. And so they might ask you, what is the kind of standard configuration? That would be, of course, the hepatic artery on the patient's left, the common bile duct on the patient's right, and then the portal vein posteriorly. And finally, just remember for the interns out there, the confluence of the SMV and the splenic vein is what forms the portal vein, and that actually lies right behind the pancreas. And all of those things kind of come into consideration when we're talking about how to do a Whipple and how to work up pancreatic cancer, things like that. Again, you want to consider preoperatively whether or not the patient's going to need an ERCP for biliary decompression, or if they're going to need neoadjuvant chemotherapy, et cetera, like we talked about in our last podcast. One patient you really might want to think about decompressing beforehand is that one who comes in with abnormal bilirubin values and is unable to undergo chemotherapy or surgery for whatever reason. Another thing is that you want to make sure you're actually adequately assessing the nutritional status of these patients. Remember that these folks have often a lot of preoperative weight loss by the time that they're presenting with pancreatic cancer. And you might want to do some things to kind of optimize them beforehand. And then finally, you also want to assess for diabetes in this preoperative period. There's a lot of complications that can occur with a procedure this big. So kind of the most common that you might get tested on is that of delayed gastric emptying. We see it all the time on the floor in these post-op patients, but you also want to think about, you know, post-operative pancreatic fistula, anastomotic stricture, and post-pancreatectomy. Hemorrhage. So we'll just pause here for a second and say Catherine is about to go over the steps of a Whipple procedure. It's pretty in-depth. We'll summarize it at least one or two more times after that as succinctly as we can, because this is something that we feel is very, very highly likely to be tested either during your residency on some sort of board exam or on the AB site, and it's something you should definitely be familiar with. So Catherine, why don't you do kind of the in-depth version of what a Whipple procedure entails?
Perfect. Yep. Like we just said, really, really highly tested. And we were just saying that this contains so many different pieces of this operation, which is one of the reasons that it's so testable. So the procedural steps to do a Whipple. First, mostly this is tested as an open operation, remembering that this now can be done laparoscopically or robotically and is being done that way at highly specialized centers, but that's a very specialized technique and is really not tested on the AB site. So for that portion, we're just going to walk you through the open steps of the operation. So first, think about entry into the abdomen through a midline incision. First step for a Whipple procedure is always complete assessment of the abdomen for any sort of metastatic disease, remembering that lots of these patients can have distant mets that developed or were not picked up, which would make those patients unresectable. And the number of times you've had to close a Whipple procedure because you found those distant mets right on opening the operation very high. So your first step is a Coker maneuver to assess the relationship of the tumor to the SMV and SMA and retroperitoneal structures such as the IVC, right renal vein, and the aorta. So real quick, gonna pause there. What is a Coker maneuver? This is a question that shows up on the AB site almost every year, I think. And so it's taking down the lateral peritoneal attachments of the duodenum so you can actually see the retroperitoneal structures such as the pancreatic head. And another favorite question is kind of to what level should you perform your Coker maneuver? And that's to the level of the left renal vein. So your next kind of couple of steps really focus on vasculature. So you identify the SMV, which comes from under the neck of the pancreas, and you follow it proximally towards the portal vein. In some cases, the tumor may be densely adherent to the vein, and at that point you would consider venous resection rather than dissection off of the vein, because you really need to ensure appropriate resection margins. Getting an R0 resection margin is incredibly important. Your next step is identification of the GDA. You want to then dissect that out and divide it. Next, cholecystectomy. Go through that exactly the same way you normally would. You want to dissect the common bile duct free and divide that right at about the level of the cystic duct insertion. If a tumor is far enough away from the pylorus, you go through a pylorus-preserving approach, dividing the duodenum 1 to 2 centimeters beyond the pylorus. If the tumor is encroaching on the pylorus, the stomach is divided above the antrum. So this is another classic area of debate in a Whipple procedure. In theory, kind of what's often termed the classical Whipple or just a Whipple procedure is not pylorus preserving, and you're dividing the stomach above the antrum. Those that are pylorus preserving, you're dividing below that. There are arguments in favor of both. The kind of classical Whipple is more extensive. There have been arguments that theoretically that should have lower rates of tumor recurrence, but it really doesn't based on data. And then the pylorus preserving should theoretically have a little bit of a higher quality of life. In reality, most of the data has shown that there's pretty much no difference, and it's mostly just surgeon preference or technique or the exact location of the tumor that's going to make that decision for a surgeon. All right, so you've kind of made your decision about moving towards pylorus preserving or classical Whipple, and then you're going to look at the right gastroepiploic vessels. You're going to divide those to retract the stomach and expose the pancreas. You're gonna make a tunnel underneath the neck of the pancreas and overlying the SMV, and then sharply divide the pancreas and the pancreatic duct. And you wanna make sure that you're IDing that duct as you divide it. You should be sending the margin of your pancreas off for frozen section to make sure that you have a negative margin. Again, R0 resection, incredibly important. Identify your proximal jejunum and divide that with a stapler about 15 centimeters distal to the ligament of Treitz. Local and regional lymph nodes need to go with your specimen, so you want to do an extended periaortic lymph node dissection. Those extended periaortic lymph node dissections really haven't been shown to improve survival, so you're just looking at local and regional nodes. The divided jejunum is passed through the transverse mesocolon to the right of the middle colic vessels so that it's in the right upper quadrant. Finally, you're going to mobilize the pancreas off the splenic vein for about 2 to 3 centimeters in order to facilitate the anastomosis. You want to create an end-to-side invaginated duct-to-mucosa pancreaticojejunostomy in 2 layers, with fine monofilament suture on the mucosa and permanent suture on the serosa and the pancreatic capsule. Then you'll do an end-to-side hepaticojejunostomy 5 to 10 centimeters away from the pancreojejunostomy in a mucosa-to-mucosa layer with absorbable monofilament. Your duodenojejunostomy or gastrojejunostomy, depending on if you opted for pylorus preserving or not, is performed in an anticholic fashion 15 to 20 centimeters downstream from your HJ. Drains, anterior and posterior to the pancreatic and biliary anastomosis. And there you go.
Perfect, okay. So I'll kind of review all that again, and I'll try to do it in about maybe 8 or 9 steps, and then at the end we'll try to do it in about 5 steps. Again, at some point in your training or in your board certification, you may be asked to rattle these off very succinctly, and so we're going to do our best to do that here. So number 1, midline laparotomy and assess for widely metastatic disease. Number 2, widely cocarize to the level of the left renal vein and assess for tumor anatomy. Number 3, divide the GDA and perform a cholecystectomy. Number 4, divide the stomach and divide the right gastroepiploic vessels. Number 5, create a retropancreatic tunnel. Number 6, divide the pancreas, send your frozen section, perform a complete lymphadenectomy. Number 7, at this point, you're ready for reconstruction. So you can transect the jejunum and get ready for those 3 anastomoses. Again, that's going to be a PJ, an HJ, and a GJ. And they're usually done in the hardest to easiest, so to speak. So the first one is a two-layer pancreaticojejunostomy with an inner absorbable layer and an outer permanent layer. Next is a single layer HJ, and that's with an absorbable monofilament suture, and finally a standard gastrodigenostomy. And number eight, perform wide drainage and closure.
All right, so after that monster of a topic, we're gonna switch gears and talk about the other operation for pancreatic cancer, which is a distal pancreatectomy with splenectomy. So the indications for this: solid tumor, PDAC, also cystic tumors like IPMNs located in the distal pancreas. Often these are performed with splenectomy in the cases of cancer just because of the involvement of the splenic vasculature that's unamenable to dissection and preservation. Anatomic high points you need to think about: a distal left pancreatectomy involves removal of the gland left of the SMA and SMV, remembering that the splenic artery lies longitudinally superior to the pancreas, and the splenic vein usually runs directly posterior to the gland. So there are spleen-preserving techniques or in-block splenectomy. Both are accepted depending on the involvement of the vascular supply and the tumor type. For patients with PDAC, you really need to remove the spleen in block to get a wide enough resection to ensure your R0 resection and to get enough lymph nodes out of that basin.
Perfect. Okay, so just kind of talking through the operative steps here. First and foremost, again, you want to do a thorough diagnostic laparoscopy before you kind of move forward, and that's to exclude the existence of any metastatic disease. First step then is to enter the lesser sac just by dividing the gastrocolic ligament. Make sure you gain control of the short gastric vessels if you're planning on doing a splenectomy because of involvement of the splenic vessels or involvement of the spleen. Then divide the splenocolic ligament and allow for inferior retraction of the transverse colon and specifically that splenic flexure. Next thing you're going to do is mobilize a pancreatic tail from the posterior retroperitoneal fat. You can do that either medial to lateral or lateral to medial. Next is ligation of the splenic vein and artery, and you can do that with staplers, ties, clips, whatever you need to do to get that done. Then you're going to actually transect the gland. So you transect the pancreas. Again, you can do that with a stapler, you can do it with an energy device. And then oversew the kind of cut end of the pancreas, either, like I said, you can either oversew it or you can put an omental pedicled flap, whatever it is that you feel comfortable with. And finally, remove that surgical specimen, send it off to pathology, and inspect the surgical bed for hemostasis. Okay. So that covered quite a bit in terms of the operative management of a lot of these pancreatic issues. Let's just move on then finally to the high points, and these will be the last ones in this entire section. So Catherine, dumb it down to the way, way, way basics. Tell me how to do a Whipple in 5 steps.
So if you think about nothing else and you can walk away with no other understanding of it, what you really want to think about is: 1, diagnostic laparoscopy to exclude metastasis. 2, dissect out the head of the pancreas by dividing the GDA and right gastroepiploic vessels. 3, divide the pancreatic parenchyma. 4, divide the jejunum, gastric antrum, or duodenum in pylorus preserving procedures. And then 5, create your 3 anastomoses for reconstruction: PJ, HJ, and either a duodeno or a gastrojejunostomy.
Okay. And then how would you do a distal pancreatectomy with an en bloc splenectomy in kind of 5 or less steps?
All right. Again, 1, diagnostic laparoscopy to exclude metastasis. 2, you want to mobilize the pancreatic tail by division of the short gastrics. 3, ligate the splenic vein and artery. 4, transect the pancreatic parenchyma. And then 5, oversew the pancreatic stump.
Okay, excellent. Well, thanks so much for listening. This was a lot of information. This section certainly something very high yield for all of your tests and also clinically. We will see you for the next section on spleen. Thanks for listening to SearchCast.
You can find SearchCast on Spotify or iTunes. Make sure you follow us on Instagram or Twitter @SearchCastPodcast, or find us at searchcastpodcast.com.